You're listening to Revolutionary Mystic, a subversive spirituality podcast where witches of color are disrupting, dismantling, and decolonizing mainstream spirituality with intersectional feminism, ancestral magic, and revolutionary thought. One unapologetic, real talk conversation at a time. Featuring your host, international psychic medium, hoodoo root worker, and astrologer, Megan Alexandria.
All right. Hello and welcome everybody to the Revolutionary Mystic Podcast. So today I have the privilege and honor of chatting with my dear friend and our guest, Medina Maitreya. Hi, Medina.
Hi, Megan. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
I am just super thrilled that you're here with me. We have been kind of like in each other's lives adjacently for some years without knowing it.
And it's true.
Yeah, have recently connected in a really cool way through this platform, actually. And so it's been a really cool experience, and I think it's really awesome that you're here joining me in one of the first episodes of this entire adventure. So
this is so exciting. Yeah, I just have to say thank you for creating this platform for people like us to have a voice and to have a place to speak. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's just super important. I want us to occupy as much space and take up as much space in spiritual narratives as possible, because as you well know, the dominant culture perspective is oftentimes taking up way too much space, and there's not enough of our voices, our wisdom being heard. And so that's why you're here, because I really want you to share some of your magic with us. So first, could you tell us a little bit about who you are, how you identify, what your pronouns are, and what it is that you do?
Absolutely. So my name's Medina Maitreya, and my pronouns are she, her, them, they. I identify as a queer femme, and I have been an artist my whole life. My current format would be, I guess, silversmithing. I like to work with turquoise. I've got a vast history of working in costuming, specifically in belly dance. Yeah, just creating stuff. My history as a person, as an Indigenous person, is Native American, from Diné all the way down to Pupil and Mexica and Indigenous tribes all over this continent, really.
Awesome. 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 And so you mentioned that, you know, you have a history of doing costume design in the belly dance community, and that's where our paths crossed without knowing that our paths were crossing all those years. For folks that are tuning in and don't know our backstory, I was belly dancing for, goodness, like 16 years in various troupes and at like the world's largest belly dance festival. And you were there with your beautiful costumes, and we were seeing each other like year after year after year. And somehow, you know, you and I never got a chance to like really connect until years later, when both of us are kind of in completely different parts of our lives now.
And absolutely.
Yeah.
So strange too, because like, you know, that festival was such a meet and greet. It was so community based. So you would see everybody, you know, and you'd be like, oh, it's time for our annual hug. Like, you really felt like you knew everyone there. And
yeah.
You always looked familiar, but I couldn't place it. And I'm like, damn, that was like 10 years of being in the same place at the same time. And we just didn't connect until now. So
yeah,
that's
definitely.
That's pretty awesome.
Definitely. I mean, so for folks at home, the festival we're talking about is a festival that no longer exists, but it was called Tribal Fest. And I used to be like the assistant to the person who was running the festival. And so I think part of the reason why you and I, and probably many other folks, didn't get to like really, really meet or get to know each other is I was often running around with a clipboard and you know, like trying to, you know, help keep things running smoothly. And if I wasn't doing that, I was getting ready to perform. So
Yeah, and I was stuck at my booth the whole time, vending. Yeah.
Yep. But I'm so glad that, you know, our paths are crossing, and I'm especially glad that they are crossing now and in the way that they are. It's been really refreshing for me, especially. It's an odd thing to be of the diaspora and to live on native land and to be native and yet not have very many native friends.
Totally. Absolutely.
It's a very strange thing, and it's something that I crave. I don't know about you, but I crave my culture a lot. And so even in just like sharing our experiences, you know, being away from the culture or, you know, reconnecting and things like that with you has been really like healing and helpful. So very grateful for our friendship.
Likewise, I think it's really important, especially for those of us that are either mixed mm-hmm. or, and especially who didn't grow up on a reservation with a tribal lineage, who are feeling that otherness and that indigenous otherness, but don't have kind of a way to connect. And what you're seeing represented as native culture is really just like, you know, it's just stuff on TV because that's not real.
Oh, totally.
So when you meet other, you know, indigenous folks and you feel kind of this kinship and you're both kind of eager and you're going down this path of like, I want to know about my native family. I want to know about the land that I'm standing on. It's just so supportive just to meet others like that. So girl, likewise, I'm so glad that we're connecting now.
Me too. And, it's like, it's inspired me in a lot of ways. Like one of the things that, you know, like you and I have like, you know, lightweight talked about doing, but I think I'm like really serious about wanting to do it. If we can figure out, time that works for both of us, is I would love for us to travel to part of our homeland. For me, that would be in Arizona, because part of my indigenous ancestors are Apache.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Turns out, like, you know, the other day I was looking on the map and I realized that the Apache reservation that one of my relatives was living on is very, very close, like neighboring a Navajo reservation. And so I was just like delighted to see that, because I was like, oh, so, you know, Medina and I are great friends now. And also, like, our ancestors were neighbors.
Yeah, girl.
Way, way fucking cool. And it's just
super cool.
It just, I don't know, it brings some healing to that feeling of separation, I suppose.
Yeah. And the feeling of otherness and wanting to know, you know, more about that. Like, what does that actually mean? You know,
yeah.
And I'm going to talk about this later on in the podcast about connecting with my Diné family and elders who have kind of guided me through this. But yeah, we need to go to Arizona and we need to go to the res. And be on, as they say, Indian land and experience that. Yeah.
I just want to put my feet on the soil and I just want to hear like what the wind has to say. I want to see what we can see. I just want to take it all in. Like, wonder if there's art for us to see. Like, if there's an, you know, even just like a museum, like just something, anything.
There's a lot, actually. There's a lot. There's a lot of beautiful artisans and crafts and things like that. But there's also, you know, families that can, that you can befriend, like, you know, my relatives there. Uncle Gilbert's a great guy. I think we're going to have a really good time.
We're going to have an amazing time.
Yeah.
I keep joking. Have you ever seen the movie Smoke Signals?
Yes.
I keep joking that, that's going to be me and you in a pickup truck.
There's a couple of really good native films I just saw, actually, just to segue a little bit. One of them is called A Real Engine, and it's all about Native Americans in film from the very beginning until modern day. And there's another one, I can't remember the name of it, but it's all about Native American musicians. And some of the famous musicians that everybody knows downplayed their indigenous roots because at the time, and even still now, it was kind of, it, you know, were oppressed minorities, you know, things like that. The famous Link Wray, who wrote one of the baddest asses rock and roll songs of all time, fully Native American, and that's incredible. And he played it down because, you know, back then it wasn't so cool.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, I'll get the name of that and you look it up. And by the end of the podcast, I'll have another movie for you guys to check out.
Awesome, awesome.
But Smoke Signals is really good. You guys should watch it.
It is. It's classic. Okay, cool. So part of what I want to do in this podcast is inspired by another podcast that I really love. And those of you that are listening, if you don't know about the podcast Hello Black, you should check it out. It's two dudes in Oakland just talking about some relevant stuff and being real and, you know, just having important conversations, bringing awareness to important things. And one of the things that I love that they do in their podcast is before they get into all that stuff, before they get into the real meat of the conversation, they have a segment called Black Joy. And, you know, they share, you know, whether it was something that happened in the news that's like, you know, kind of like Black excellence and brought them joy, or they speak to like personally in their lives, like something that has brought them joy in the last week or so. It's just a great way to make space and hold space for the joy and the happiness and all of the wonderful things that us, you know, marginalized folks also get to experience. Because in our news feeds and even in our communities and our experiences and our daily lives, like it can get real heavy. And I know sometimes I feel like I am overwhelmed and suffocating in, you know, very harsh realities. And
it's a lot to take in.
It's a lot to take in.
Yeah. And, you know, it's practicing self-care applies to this greatly. Like you have to filter how much you can take. You really do.
Hell yes. And, you know, like one of the things I use some mantra sometimes on one of mine is that joy is revolutionary too. And so, inspired by the Hella Black podcast, Black Joy section, this section I am calling, you know, the What's Good section. And so, you know, Medina, you go first. If you wouldn't mind sharing with us, you know, like what's good for you right now? Like what's good on your path? What's something that's brought you peace, healing, joy, anything that's good for you right now?
There's a lot going on in the world, and it took me a minute to really think about condensing, like, okay, what's the joyous part of my life and my reality? Like, what am I really feeling like? Fuck yeah, about. And it came to me really quickly is what I'm really feeling the most powerful and joyous and like happy about is my Indigenous awakening, but also acknowledging where I grew up, which is not my homeland. I grew up on the Big Island of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And that's a very, very important place to me. I benefited greatly from the Hawaiian cultural renaissance of the 70s from growing up in Hawaii in the 80s. So during class every day, public school, after lunch, you had Hawaiian culture class. So not only was the culture, the language, hula and surfing and all the arts and the food taught to you every single day in public school. Like this is kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I lived there for 8 years, so it became a huge part of who I am. So today, you know, in my 40s, what do I do to honor that and to feel strong and powerful? And what brings me joy is I go back to those cultural moments and I try to learn languages.
Mm-hmm.
So a friend of mine, Mahea Lani, she offers Hawaiian language courses in Albany. Another friend of mine down in L.A., offers courses in Nahuatl, which is Mayan language, Aztec Mayan language. So there are places you can go and you can learn these incredible languages that aren't spoken very much and that people have a hard time understanding because they've been either wiped out or colonized.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy. The access is easy. So I follow Speak Nahuatl Instagram. I follow Mahea Lani. She's on Facebook and she's a dance studio and she's fantastic, and I'll give you guys all the links later. But that's what's bringing me joy, is practicing these native languages that aren't so common. And yeah, they're really hard to pronounce because, you know, we haven't really been exposed to them.
Yeah.
So that totally blows my mind and makes me super happy. It also feels like a contrast to maybe the anger that I feel as an Indigenous woman, right? Because of the colonization and, you know, let's just say it, like the rape and genocide of all these people, mm-hmm. along with that goes the language. So speaking these languages and pronouncing these words and getting familiar with them totally brings me joy. It feels mm-hmm. good. And it doesn't feel like a fuck you kind of moment. It feels like it's just beautiful.
Yeah. So
currently that's what's blowing my mind and making me super happy and bringing joy.
Yeah. That's so powerful. And
oh, it is. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You know, like, and the thing is about, like, I know what you mean. Like, I don't remember it right now, but, at one point I had memorized, how you say, you know, thank you and you're welcome and hello in some of my native tongue. And, I remember feeling like when you speak those words, it like evokes the energy or activates the energy of the ancestors.
Absolutely.
And that's that. That for me, that's where that like joyous magic feeling comes from. And I think that's because words are magic, you know, like we talk about the word spelling, you know, when you spell something out, what does that mean? And it's like, okay, well, when you say stuff with your mouth and you're communicating words, you're literally taking something that was internal and breathing like life force into it and taking it from an internal space into an external space. And in doing so, when you're spelling, you are spelling. So like, you know, casting a spell with your words.
Absolutely. And I do feel like I breathe life into, you know, the history and the people and my people and, you know, all of these incredible things that are just not as prominent today because of colonization. So yeah, it absolutely feels that way.
Yeah, it's like resurrecting something that would, you know, otherwise go extinct if we don't keep it alive.
Absolutely, especially in the United States. Like yeah. I know in Mexico, Central America, you know, there are a lot of native Nahuatl speakers, but, you know, these are words that are really hard for people to pronounce. Like Chipotle is really hard for people to pronounce, you know, stuff like that. It's just, you just need more familiarity with the language and you need to speak it and learn how to like, you know, roll it off your tongue and then it becomes just like anything else.
Well, yeah, it's like literally like decolonizing your tongue.
Yep.
And the way it moves.
Yep.
That's got to be super powerful for like your throat chakra and everything. I can only imagine. You know what I mean? Damn, that's way cool. Awesome. Well, that's like, that's perfect as far as, you know, what's good.
Oh man, I could go off on a whole separate podcast about native languages and colonization. So I had to keep it short, but yeah, it's badass.
That is badass. Someday I want to get to be fluent in both Nahuatl and also Apache and Lakota too would be awesome. So, you know, we'll get around to it, but
we'll get there.
We'll get there. But first, I suppose I will share what's good right now on my path. And I, you know, it's interesting because I do so much and then there's things like this that I forget to share with folks, even though I do share a lot, you know, on the internet and things like that with you know, my friends and folks that follow my work, etc. But one of the things that I haven't gotten to really like say and share with folks, which is kind of cool because I've been, you know, getting to keep all the excitement to myself, is just in working on this whole podcast project and like, you know, writing this list of names of folks that I am reaching out to. And they're an incredibly diverse, badass list of folks, and that list keeps expanding and expanding and expanding, and it feels like this list is even like a living, breathing entity and into itself, because once I add a couple more names and somebody else is like, hey, you know what, you got to connect with so and so because, you know, they're really great at this. And what's really, really awesome is what's happening is I'm experiencing a contrast to, you know, all of the harm and the traumatizing things that we experience in our daily lives all day, every day as marginalized folks. And a steep contrast to all the stuff that you know, I try to stay privy to, like, in my news feed, you know, keeping up with current events that, you know, are directly affecting marginalized people. Like, that stuff's real heavy, real intense, and can, mm-hmm. you know, leave you feeling really, really powerless. But when I'm, like, connecting with these people, and like before this podcast recording, you know, I had a conversation with you, Medina, about what it was going to be about, and you know, what we were going to talk about. And having those conversations so far, like, not even getting to the recording part yet, but just getting to, like, meet these folks and hear about, you know, what they're bringing to the world, and seeing and, like, observing, like, their ancestral greatness, like, living through them, that gives me so much hope and fills me with so much joy, just to see us, like, thriving and standing still, like, and, like, really holding our sacred space, our sacred ground, really, like, reactivating, like, indigenous wisdom, medicine, and, like, keeping it all alive, keeping that culture alive. And every single person that I've spoken to is, you know, working with other folks. And so it's like, you know, the illusion is that everything, yes, it is actually really dire, right?
Yeah, it really fucking is.
Things really are fucking dire, right? And however, there's not enough representation in front of our faces because of, you know, the colonized world that we live in, and the way
I do want to give it up to the squad, though. I feel super represented by those four ladies.
Oh, yeah. You know, like,
but that's, like, the first time, you know, that I'm watching, you know, women of color in Congress and kicking ass. And of course, you know, we know what's going on with the president and them, but it just, like, they give me hope because I'm watching the four of them, like, band together and really be supportive.
Hell yeah.
Because like, everywhere else you don't see that.
Yeah. And just, like, even the fact that, like, their responses to the bullshit is even being played. So, I'm like, oh, thank you. Like, that's cool.
Yeah. And they're wise as fuck. I'm really down with them.
Yeah. And they're not backing off either. Yeah. I was even thinking the other day, I was like, I kind of want to make, like, candles of them, you know?
Yeah. Like, to support these women. I mean, they're just like, boy, they are in, you know, the lion's den, and they're doing a great job, and they're handling it with grace. And they're just, they're the shining beacon that I'm really feeling good about, you know, after years and years and years of feeling really bad about the U.S. government in general, about watching, you know, just kind of atrocities about, you know, people of color and women and all these things. Like, these four women are just really showing up. I'm really grateful for them. Yeah.
They really are. Yeah. So, you know, and that's basically, like, kind of what I'm saying is, like, that beacon of hope. I'm getting to experience that mm-hmm. beacon of hope through each and every one of us, through you, through every single person that, you know, eventually everybody's going to get to hear on this podcast. Like, and that's kind of why I wanted to do this in the first place, is that I just wanted to show us that, you know, we are the remedy to all of this, and we are, you know, healing this. We are, you know, making movement, you know, making progress. It's not all just despair. Like, there is lots to be hopeful for, and there is lots to do and lots to contribute, and it looks many different ways. And so that is exactly why the Revolutionary Mystic podcast is because I'm hoping that folks will realize, like, every single person has something to bring to this. And you know,
absolutely. I have to thank you again for such a thoughtful and, like, well-rounded curation of people that you're going to bring into this podcast. I'm excited to hear it, and I'm really honored to be here. So right on.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm super stoked too. It's important. I feel like for all of us, you know, to one of the things that's, like, healing, for me anyways, at some point, my really good friend who will also be on this podcast at some point, Shaida, you know, they told me, they were like, And girl, like, you need to clean out your newsfeed and, like, unfollow, like, hella colonial shit and then, like, refill that up with folks that look like us, that live like us and things yeah. like that. So I did that. And then, which was amazing, super huge, very amazing. You know, I unfollowed all kinds of spiritual bullshit. I was like, you know what? Abraham Hicks, done, gone. law of attraction, done, gone. All that shit. And then,
oh God, I could talk about law of attraction all day long. Too. It's so toxic.
Me too. Yeah. And then, you know, so I filled it back up with folks like us. And then the next layer of that was, hey, you know what? I want to see some fucking perspectives of marginalized folks that aren't mine also. Yeah. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's important too. So, you know, for those folks at home that are like looking for ways to broaden their perspective and to really open up their minds, you know, like, yeah, for sure. Like, follow the narratives of your people. That is healing for sure. And also make sure that you're also paying attention to, you know, other folks. And that's what intersectionality is all about. It's all about asking yourself continuously, like, who's being left out of the conversation, the picture, et cetera, and then putting them back in. So in any case, that's what's been good for me lately. And, you know, Medina, I brought you here today because you and I have been connecting also in another way. Medina, you take classes with me online. You've been studying hoodoo and getting to connect with your roots in that way, because as a hoodoo teacher, that's how I work with folks, is it's all about roots and connecting with the folk magic and wisdom of your people. And so would you mind sharing a little bit about, you know, your experience with reconnecting with your ancestors and all that good stuff?
Absolutely. Boy, my experience has been recent. It's interesting. I've been thinking a lot about this, not just when we first spoke about, like, you know, the guidelines about our podcast and here's what we're going to talk about, but this has been a thought on my mind for a few years as I come into more and more awareness of my otherness and my indigenousness. Like, I grew up not knowing that I was a person of color. I was surrounded by white people. Mm-hmm. You know, the other half of my family is super white. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I even realized I was a person of color. I certainly had, you know, racist moments, and I was threatened and screamed at and yelled and attacked, you know, and told all kinds of things because I was brown. But it mm-hmm. didn't occur to me that I was not white passing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been like almost like a late in life journey to realize, wait a minute, this is my fucking land. I'm mm-hmm. standing on the land of my ancestors, like literally, this mm-hmm. is where I'm from. I'm, you know, my family is from, you know, the Southwest, Arizona, California, Mexico, you know, El Salvador. This is my fucking land. Mm-hmm. And so that was a kind of a huge eye opener for me. And so connecting with my indigenous roots and connecting with ancestral awareness, you know, I hate to say it, but a lot of the genealogy testing and DNA testing, especially from the National Genographic Project, mm-hmm. really opened my eyes, and it showed me how indigenous I was. And mm-hmm. I think that that's probably really common with indigenous folks who don't have a tribal lineage or a literal tribe who's mm-hmm. been passing down stories about their family and stories about their people. Mm-hmm. In America, we're a giant melting pot, so we've got all of these things going on. Not all of us have, you know, not all of us grew up the same way.
Yeah.
So the contrast for me and how I embraced the indigenous side of my family is by feeling the outcast, the feeling of being an outcast by my white family. I was treated different. So even from, you know, being a little kid and growing up, I was treated different from all the other, you know, the blonde, blue-eyed part of my family.
Yep.
So all of that came into effect as I started thinking about it more and more into my adulthood. There's a very, very big elephant in the room when it comes to experiencing my, indigenousness and my ancestry. And it's called intergenerational trauma.
Yeah.
And it's really, really, really a real thing, folks. You know, if you're feeling some kind of way about the world and you're feeling like this struggle and this angst, it's real and you need to find out why. And for me, it was watching, you know, both sides of my family, you know, watching the misogyny and the abuse and watching the racism, you know. There's so much more to say. I want to keep it really concise and not go into, like, you know, a therapy session. But so in accepting that and learning that and really going to dark places and really thinking, you know, about my life, you know, like I would, like a crime investigator. I find that now it's not a calling to me. It is my actual responsibility to acknowledge that and to preserve that indigenous part of me. Because, you know, when you think about things like, oh, well, how native are you? Okay, well, that is like, you know, a white man's construct because that, you know, when you get your Indian card, it shows what percentage Indian you are. And that's, yeah, I know that's a whole can of worms. Because they were smart about it because they knew that eventually there wouldn't be any more.
Yeah, the blood would run out.
They knew that after generation of generation, your Indianness, your otherness, right, your nativeness would dilute, and they wouldn't have to pay you out reparations. They wouldn't have to pay for you to go to school eventually.
And then they could take all the rest of the land, too.
Yep, and then they can take your land because, oh, sorry, you're not native enough to own this land or to live on this land. Yep. So it's important. And it's my responsibility to claim that and stand up for it. You know, my DNA says I'm 24% Native American, but because I don't have a tribal lineage, a direct tribal lineage, I'm not acknowledged as a Native American. I don't have an Indian card. Yeah. I don't get anything for free from the government. I don't get any, not that, you know, it's a bonus.
Yeah.
But I'm not acknowledged as Native American.
Yeah.
So that is my responsibility. And that's my experience with that.
Yeah. And that, like, lack of acknowledgement is, I don't know about for you, but that, like, if we're talking about intergenerational trauma, like, that's a wound that I've carried, you know, like, to know the truth and to, you know, feel the sadness around, like, separation from my people, my culture, et cetera, even though I have had some exposure to it, but not nearly as much as I would like to. In that, you know, preserving it, like you said, and claiming it, in response to that is healing. And it's like, it's kind of just like, you know what? Fuck you. Like, I am Indian enough.
Yeah, exactly. You know? There's also the issue of, like, you know, I'm sure there's an interactive map somewhere out there that shows how the southern border of the United States has greatly vacillated, you know, north and south to include Mexico, to exclude Mexico. So those of us who are born, you know, our family is born on the other side, the southern side of the border, we're not Indians. We're Mexicans, right?
Right.
And then those of us who are born on, you know, the north side of the border, oh, well, you're Indian and you get a card. We need tribal lineage to know how Indian you are. So it's kind of like, you know, it's a shit sandwich both ways.
Yep.
You know, because your Indian card is only good for so many generations because of just, you know, that's how it's going to go.
Yep.
So yeah, so it is my responsibility to, like, proclaim and to project my indigenousness.
Yep. And it's like, I love, I saw one time and I have held on to it and will continue to hold on to it. I believe it was like either a meme or something that somebody said, but like it said, I'm black first on purpose. and I don't know, like, if you ever read anything where, like, I, you know, identify myself, you know, I will say black, indigenous, you know?
Yeah.
And, it's very on purpose. And what that means, like, you know, how do you be black on purpose? How do you be indigenous on purpose? It's a thing because, like, there's one thing to, oh, you know, be either of those identities by default, you know, like, oh yeah, I guess I'm that, sure, you know, like, whatever you say. And then there's, like, you owning it, you claiming it, and you commanding what that is and how that looks and how folks ought to treat you. et cetera, and so forth. That's, you know, being Black or being Indigenous first and on purpose.
Yeah. I absolutely connect with that big time, because my initial awareness about, you know, my ethnicity was default. People didn't want to know. People wanted to know what I was because I was brown and, undefinable, right? Yeah. There was a bit of like exoticism. They're like, oh, what are you?
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I was, you know, classified as other.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just default. I'm like, when anyone asks me what I am, I tell them the brown part first, because that's what they're asking.
Yep.
They're not asking what kind of European am I.
Yeah.
They're asking why I'm brown.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that default, it started feeling like a point of pride. I was like, yeah, I am this, because that's what you see and that's what you want to know. And I'm going to fucking tell you about it.
Yep.
So I don't tell people that I'm a lot German. I tell people I'm native, because I look native, but I'm also kind of, you know, I'm not white passing, but I'm also ambiguous.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yeah, so the default turned into a point of pride.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and you're totally right. Like, I think that, because I get that too. Like, I get the, like, racially ambiguous bullshit. And so, you know, that's part of why I say it first too. And I love, like, cause I carry it with hella pride, like, Black first, you know? And, it's funny because you either get one or two reactions. You either get the surprise, oh wow, really? Or you get the, oh yeah, I could see that.
Oh, so gross. It's like they're sizing you up and like putting all of your features, or you're like,
looking at your phenotypes.
And putting you in little boxes that they understand. It's the same kind of thing when you go to a party and someone asks what you do.
Yep.
Like, what do you do for a living? And you're like, ew. Like, why do you want to categorize me like that? Just ask me what my name is.
Yeah.
You know, just talk to me. Don't judge me.
Well, yeah. And, you know, that's a complete and total, you know, part of living in a settler colonial, society that is, you know, based on capitalism. And so when folks are asking you, you know, so tell me a little bit about, you know, what you do, what they're actually asking about is,
how much money do you make?
How much money do you make? What type of job do you have? How much respect do I actually have for you? Like, they're trying to place you above or below them.
Yep.
And, you know, decide, especially if you're sitting with somebody who's white, you know, they're like, what kind of brown person are you? Like,
how much
respect do I actually have for you? You know,
I remember this one time, my friend was getting married and the parents were from Holland.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a very German last name that I'm not going to share with you here. And they knew it. And they asked me pointedly, like, oh, so that's your last name? I'm like, yeah. And they kind of paused and looked at me and they were like, so why are you so brown? And this is like in a loving, supportive environment. Like, it was one of my best friends getting married. Like, there were friends around, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I'm like, damn, that was so direct. I mean, I kind of have to give it up to them for being so direct. You know, most people are, you know, they kind of tiptoe around it.
Yeah.
But, you know, my answer at the time was very respectful because it was at a friend's wedding, but I really wish I would have said something a little more educational and intense.
Yeah.
But what I told them was, well, you know, this is America and it's a melting pot here. And, you know, my mom's family is from Central America and Mexico. And then they just kind of were quiet and turned away. It was really awkward, but that's what people want to know.
Yep.
And hardly anyone is that direct, but that's really what they want to know, is what kind of brown are you?
Yep. Oh God. And that question, and it's often, I don't know about if you experience it this way, but for me, it's such a like odd question too, because it's, what are you?
Yeah.
Like, I'm some type of like other creature or alien or something. And it's so offensive, especially when it comes from, a white person. Cause I'm like, bro, like, I'm a byproduct of your ancestors' bullshit. You want to know what I am? Like,
yeah. Do I need to give you a history lesson? Like, come on.
Yeah. And so like, what was interesting is when I was growing up, my mom has always been very proud and always let me know, like, you know, like we are, you are Black first. You are Indigenous too. And, so she also specifically was like, you know, and we're Creole Black, which is like, you know, a specific region, a specific mm-hmm. culture. And so, I didn't know any better when I was growing up, you know, and I was just like, you know, repeating what my mom said. So I was like, we're, you know, I'm Creole. And, then I used to say Mexican. I don't say Mexican anymore. I don't say Latina. I don't say Latinx anymore. I just say Indigenous. But when I would tell white people, like, oh, yeah, like, I'm Creole and I'm Mexican, and they'd be like, what's Creole? And I love, like, in hindsight, my little kidness and my innocence, like, just being hella honest, I was like, well, you know, like... In Louisiana, when there was like slaves, the slave masters used to like rape Black people, and thus like Creole culture was born. So
snap. I mean, who doesn't know that? Like, a lot of let me just remind you, like, that's how it happened. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that's a heavy identity to carry too. I think, like, as Indigenous women, especially those of us that are mixed, is like, as far as like intergenerational wounds go, and like what we inherit is this knowing that because we are mixed, that it is very highly probable, if not almost completely certain, that we are mixed because of some type of violence that has taken place on,
you know, hundreds of years,
the women in our lineage. Yeah,
absolutely.
You can basically guarantee that we're like byproducts of, you know, rape and
others. Yeah, you can guarantee it if you're brown in this country. That's what's going on.
Yep.
It breaks my heart, and it's something that I really have to come to terms with. And, you know, it affects my relationship with feminism greatly, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So you wanted to share a little bit more, Medina, about where you are at as far as like intergenerational trauma and all that kind of stuff goes.
Absolutely. Touching back on my comment about feeling like it's my responsibility to be super visible as an Indigenous woman and as a queer Indigenous woman. Mm-hmm. The reality is that, you know, this world is kind of set up specifically for BPOC and, you know, anyone who's an other, they have to follow a prescribed path or they suffer. And I'm not content with that. I don't accept that.
Mm-hmm.
And instead I choose to take control mm-hmm. of my own life. And at times, yeah, I will suffer because I'm going to go against the grain.
Mm-hmm.
But it's my own choice to, I choose that suffering because it's a more authentic and legitimate life for me.
Yeah.
It's more visible.
And it's more authentic because it is Indigenous, you know what I mean? It's counter colonial. And so
absolutely.
Yeah.
And how wild of a concept is that? How big of a task is that to live Indigenously, mm-hmm. to not live under colonial constructs? I mean, when you think about it, like, how can you possibly do that? I mean, I don't even know if, you know, my family on the reservation is available to do that. Like, what kind of limitations do we have as Indigenous people? You know, tons. Yeah. I mean, countless.
Yeah.
So,
I think that, as a living ancestor today, like, I am always looking for ways to do that. And I think, like, part of my practice as a witch, a spiritual person, me, an anarchist, like all of these other, like, whatever identities I have, like the way that, you know, I actively use that is by being a trickster. So I'm always
looking at a coyote.
Yeah. Or a wolf.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm always looking for the way around that bullshit. And, 'cause you're right. Like, there are limitations and but a lot of them are also like perceived limitations. And I like what you were saying about like taking life on your terms in your ways. And because I can relate a lot to that too. And I'm thinking of a couple ways that I know that you and I both do that is in, you know, having worked for ourselves, things like that. And just like having that perspective of indigeneity, like period, like seeing it through an indigenous lens, seeing anything and like remembering to take off the colonial lens and set it down and like put on, you know, or sit with your ancestral wisdom that lives inside of your DNA and allow that to, you know, see the world through that lens. And
absolutely
helps you make, you know, I feel like a lot of times like choices you may not have otherwise even thought to make because we're so conditioned to act and think in certain ways.
Yeah, I find as a modern woman or as, you know, an intersectional feminist, a lot of the choices that I make, especially about business and running my own business and being my own boss, a lot of these choices come naturally. And mm-hmm. this is something that I find like, this is one of, like, I'm really proud of that about me. Mm-hmm. Like, one of my greatest assets is, you know, freedom of choice. And the choices that I make are almost non-choices. I'm just like, yes or no. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, I don't choose that colonial bullshit. I choose, you know, uplifting and, you know, pro-feminist choices in my life. And, you know, I don't follow the prescribed path, mm-mm. you know, of what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, you don't and play like into, like, no, the respectability politics.
Yeah, because I really just don't give a shit. But a lot of times there's the opposite of that is like, God, it's really hard to make it in life if you don't. And that's what I'm talking about when I say I'm taking control of my life and I'm taking control of my suffering. Like, I choose the harder path because it's more authentic to me.
Yep.
And that's fine, you know. It's a hard choice to make because suffering fucking sucks.
Yeah.
nobody wants to struggle. But, you know, if you're aware of your own self, and especially if you're, you know, you have a commitment to projecting strength in indigenousness and, you know, your feminism, you have to make those choices. You have to do the hard work.
And how powerful, though, if you think about, too, like, how extraordinary for you to already, you know, have your specific set of marginalized identities, you know, and to also within that, like with all of the added hardship, all the barriers that come along with that, even still to choose something that may not be the easy path or anything that's aligned with colonialism or capitalism or whatever it is.
Patriarchy.
Like, yeah, patriarchy. Like, for you to even still choose to walk the path of a creator, an artist, you know, like the narrative in colonial culture is like, oh, starving artist, you know.
Which is such bullshit.
It's such bullshit. It doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. It's totally a trap. I mean, there is an argument that you could say, like, you know, in ancient times, there were patrons that just paid for, you know, talented artisans to create work. Yeah, that was true, like, mm-hmm. a really long time ago. That's not the world we live in. The Industrial Revolution happened and that changed everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know. I just think that it's really beautiful and wonderful that, you know, I don't know if it has been for you, but for me, and it was a long, hard fucking road, especially because I was simultaneously getting diagnosed with all these like really debilitating chronic illnesses. But when I was making my transition from having like a quote unquote normal day job to working for myself like full time, it was extremely challenging, but also there was a lot of deprogramming that happened, and it was ended up being like really healing and liberating to even just have autonomy over one's time, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's been really, really amazing to me to realize that I created this thing out of almost a bit of obsession, really. Obsessive, yeah. Compulsion to just really like be an artist, create my own, you know, my body of work, market it. And basically I did every single bit of, you know, the business. I was running admin. I was doing marketing. I was doing customer service. I was doing shipping. I was doing the creating, the manufacturing, the designing, doing everything. And, I wouldn't change it because I have complete autonomy.
I wouldn't change it either. Freya is agreeing with us.
That's right, Freya.
And I can totally relate because, you know, in my business, I don't think folks get to see that behind the scenes. And it's not necessarily something you know until you've lived the life of, you know, a self-employed person. I really hate the word entrepreneur, so I rarely use that word, but I tend to say self-employed or self-made. But like, you know, what most folks see on Instagram is like, oh, you know, like me and tarot cards and me and the dogs or whatever. But like you said, like you're doing admin, you're doing customer service, you're doing the shipping, you're doing the designing, you're doing the, like all of this stuff. And on top of that, existing as us, with our identities and, you know, like with chronic illness and stuff like that, like that's pretty fucking badass.
Yeah. There was a time that I could afford to have an assistant, and I have to give a shout out to her because she is also a Black Indigenous woman. And Pixie, if you're listening to this, I love you and I miss you so much and I wish I could afford you. Aww. But thank you. And yeah, she worked with me and, you know, for a good year or two, and she was fantastic. And, so there is help out there, but you know, unless you have like this giant kind of like, you know, investment or nest egg or whatever, you're just kind of independently wealthy. Everything takes a lot longer to build up to. Like it took me 10 years to be able to afford an assistant. That's insane. It's no wonder I have back problems and carpal tunnel, right? Because I've just been like this one woman show. And a lot of people don't realize that when you are a self-made person or you are, you know, running your own business and you're like a small business owner, yeah, it's all you. It's all you. There are no volunteers.
Yeah. And so like, you know, simultaneously is it liberating and, you know, gives us a certain amount of freedom and privilege. And also at the same time, it's like, I don't know, quadruple the amount of work, 10 times the amount of work.
It's constant. You're never off work. You know, I always say being my own boss is like being a tyrant boss and being a lazy employee at the same time, because you're like, you're so heavy on yourself about what you need to produce and what you need to do. But at the same time, you're like, God, I really just need to sleep. Like, I need a day off. And it's this like duality that is, honestly, it's probably manic. But that's really what you're looking at when you want to create your own business and you're doing it all yourself. So yeah. Those of you out there who don't know, now you know.
Now you know.
You
know, and like because I do that a lot. I have a Capricorn moon. So, and I'm in Aries.
I do too.
Oh, you do too?
I do too. Yeah.
No wonder why we get shit done. I try to remind myself because, you know, I tend to be really hard on myself and always have been. And it's of nobody's doing other than my own.
We're the best at criticizing ourselves, right? Like we're
absolutely
the best.
Absolutely.
No one can beat us at that.
Absolutely. And like my poor mom, I remember growing up, like I would just like bawl if something wasn't perfect. Like, if I got an A-, that's her story she likes to tell. Like, I would come home from the gifted program at school with an A- and be crying. And she'd be like, I don't get it. She's like, I don't understand why my child is doing this. I'm not that mom. Like, I'm proud of her. And it's, you know, part of it is like, yeah, I have a Capricorn moon. But then, so I try to remember that, be cognizant of like my astrology. And then the other thing that I try to be cognizant of is that's a straight up like patriarchal, like capitalistic narrative too.
Bam. I was just gonna say that. I'm like, who cares what these people are grading you at, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we could have a whole another podcast about creatives and their experience with, like, you know, the current educational system and how they fit in or don't fit in, and who's, you know, neuroatypical, and who's, you know, who, what does smart really mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, what does school actually teach you? Does it teach you things you need to know, or does it teach you discipline and memorization? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So grades were always a struggle for me too. Like, if I applied myself, I was in gifted courses. And when I didn't give a shit, I was like, whatever.
Yep.
Because it's a system that doesn't really represent who I am. It doesn't represent who people are.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's a hard lesson when you learn, because, you know, you go to school from the time you're 5 years old until you're like, hopefully you go to college, hopefully you get that opportunity through college. That's a huge portion of your life that you're forced into this little system. And, it's easy to beat yourself up about not getting great grades.
That's years of your life dedicated to something that, you know, come to find out, doesn't define you and doesn't necessarily guarantee you or grant you success in any, you know.
And that's a revolutionary thought right there. It is. Realizing what you've been put through and what you just accepted as like, okay, I'm supposed to do this. Realizing that that's not real and that doesn't mean shit. That's revolution right there.
Yep. That's the damn truth. I actually didn't go to college. Well, okay. That's a partial truth. I tested out of high school. I got my proficiency like halfway through my sophomore year and went to the junior college. But I was also like experiencing houselessness and a myriad of other traumatic things and working full time and like all this other intense stuff. But I had an intuitive moment and I didn't know that it was coming from an indigenous place within me. I just knew that it was a feeling and a feeling that I couldn't ignore, but I'll never forget it. I was sitting at a desk. I was in class. There was fluorescent lights beating down on me.
Oof.
And I was, you know, doing really well in school. And I just started to feel like and this is how intuition works. Like, I don't belong here. I don't know why, but this isn't for me. And I got up. Like, packed up my shit, put it in my backpack, walked out, and never went back. And
I did the same thing.
Did you?
I did the same thing, and I was in 10th grade. Oh, and wow. I left class, and I was like, I was already in continuation school, because I was like, oh, God, regular high school, not for me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went to continuation school, and I just went home one day in the middle of geology, which is now, I wish I had stayed, because geology is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
I went home and I told my parents, I'm like, I'm done. It's not for me. I'm just going to go get a job. And they were like, yeah, we kind of expected you to say that. And that was that, you know? And, and that is a revolutionary thought, realizing that, oh, the system that I'm put into is like, nope, it's not for me. I'm seeing above that.
Yeah. So like for folks like listening at home, if this hasn't already come to you, like if you struggle with, you know, the outline of what you're expected to do in life and like what the steps are to success or happiness or whatever, like you can go ahead and like take all of that shit and like burn it up somewhere, because it's all bullshit. Like I'll tell you, like I have so much joy, freedom, and I'm more or less able to like provide for myself too. And like, I didn't go to college. I didn't get a degree. Even before I was running my own business, like I was working in a career field as a caseworker, a social worker. And, you know, like I was outranking people who had degrees because I had experience. So like, there's a myriad of ways. There's infinite ways for you to find your path. And it doesn't have to look like the way folks tell you to. And so what I'm really saying is, you know, just know that all of those ideas are just colonial structures. And you can step outside of that anytime you want and give yourself permission to not do the colonial thing and say, fuck this, I'm going to do what I want.
You absolutely can. You can. However, if you are super stoked on being in school and you really like it, stay in school.
Yeah.
You know, if it's for you and if you find that you're succeeding and, you know, and you're aware that this is a construct, but you're totally great at being a student and you're kicking ass, stay in school, learn as much as you can. It's going to benefit you. But in saying that, what I mean is that there are a million different ways to live your life, you know, and to survive and to thrive. And, if you feel burdened by what you have to do, like what you're supposed to do, man, let that go.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Do what feels good and fuck the rest.
But be a good person and don't do drugs.
Yeah. Or at least do them safely.
Do them safely.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Revolution.
Yes.
Forge your own path.
Absolutely.
That's been my focus lately, is revolution, as it applies to my life, specifically in decolonizing everything around me. You know, we talked a little bit about, or you brought up a little bit about chronic illness and being, you know, having a disability and having kind of limitations on your health. And part of what I'm so focused on, which is also part of my Indigenous awareness and my ancestral awareness, is decolonizing my mental health and my medicine.
Yeah.
And this is something that's really important. And it also kind of echoes what we just said about, you know, the structure of school and the structure, the education system. If it doesn't work for you, that's fine. There are other options. And I'm going to tell you right now, the same goes for the health industry. If it doesn't work for you, there are other options, you know, yeah. And specifically with my ancestors, with being Native American, you know, we've been here forever, guys. This is our land. You know, modern medicine came along not too long ago. In the scheme of things, there are other ways to be healthy, and there are other ways, you know, to live and to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
So, gosh, decolonizing your mental health. What a huge, like, mind blower, right?
Yeah.
Like, talking about touching back on ancestral and intergenerational trauma. Like, if you come from, gosh, the Americas, or, you know, your ancestors were slaves, like, there, like we said earlier, there's a high probability that, you know, you and your ancestors are a product of violence and rape. And that carries with you. And there's a lot to be said about decolonizing that mental health. Like, just be aware that you have a generational trauma to deal with, and be kind to yourself about that.
Mm-hmm.
And be aware of that and acknowledge it. It's a real thing.
Like, carrying, so part of, like, intergenerational trauma is knowing that, you know, we carry the DNA of our ancestors. And so we are quite literally carrying their pain in ourselves, and, you know, their grief, their heartache, their trauma. And, that manifests in so many different ways. And as somebody with, you know, multiple chronic illnesses, you know, at some point, in the beginning of, like, my journey in knowing that I was chronically ill, I thought it was my job to undo it, to fix it somehow. And that's very, very, very colonial thinking, right? Like, oh, there must be a way to fix this. And now, like, through my Indigenous lens, through my ancestral wisdom, I am just seeing that, you know, the healing may be in fully understanding, like, where all of that comes from.
Absolutely. You got to look at it, like, directly in the face.
Yeah. And, like,
you have to acknowledge it.
And living anyway, as best as I can, you know, like, I don't know, if that resonates for you, but, like, just knowing that, like, oh, okay, like, so I might not ever cure or fix certain symptoms or diagnoses that I have, and that's okay. And knowing that, you know, like, hey, if you're listening to this, you're feeling stressed out, feeling down, going through some shit, like, it's cool, yo. Like, you're carrying a lot of intergenerational trauma. You are healing intergenerational trauma. You are breaking ancestral curses, and that's a lot.
Yeah, and there are colonial forces at work today to keep you down. So it is a battle. So if you're feeling, you know, like, you're at the end of the rope, if you're feeling like this is too much, yeah, they're trying to make it too much. And you got to be stronger, and you have to acknowledge that this is a continuing cycle, and breaking through it is really important. I feel like for those of you who are listening who have chronic illness, who have, you know, genetic syndromes, things like that, the awareness of ancestral trauma is huge. And this is actually what made me so aware about that. It made me come to terms with my genetic syndrome. So I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome type 3 hypermobility. And clinically speaking, my body doesn't handle collagen well. So I'm super hypermobile. I'm really flexible, which means that all my joints are loosey-goosey. And there's a bunch of other stuff that goes with it too, like dysautonomia, POTS, P-O-T-S, and mast cell activation syndrome. You can look all those up. They're kind of a nightmare. But so all of these things that are passed down to me, that have been passed down to me from, you know, from my dad, talk about, you know, an awareness about ancestral trauma. Like, this is stuff that goes way back. Who knows when it first started, where the gene mutated back in my family somewhere, and it got passed down all the way to me. That's a lot to handle, and that's a lot to take in. And it just touches back on my really, like, my responsibility to be authentic and to acknowledge and support my indigenousness, you know? Mm-hmm. These are all callbacks to my ancestral trauma and to my ancestors, mm-hmm. and to work in ancestral, you know, magic, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in like preserving or even, you know, like resurrecting some parts of our culture that have otherwise, you know, been, God, just kind of like lost in translation or, whitewashed over, et cetera, and so forth. Like, in doing all of that, heals what was lost. And so I think that that's maybe more of like what healing is about, in terms of, at least for me, in dealing with like the intergenerational trauma that translates to chronic illness. Like,
yeah, it's been, and it is a huge part of my, healing toolbox, right? Mm-hmm. Acknowledging this past trauma and that I've carried it with me. I mean, when you think about it, in really, like, if I were to be very vulgar in the moment, the outrage I have about imagining, like, gosh, how many hundreds of years, mm-hmm. of rape and slavery, genocide, violence, and cultural, colonial assimilation my family went through to get to me here today. And I'm alive and I'm fighting and I'm a living ancestor who has survived all of that. Yeah. That's a lot. That's hundreds of years of shit to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, and there has to be some sort of echo. I don't think that there can't be. Like, even if you think about, you know, my grandmother was carrying me and my mother's eggs in her.
Mm-hmm.
That's three generations that she's carrying in her living body, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a connection and there's a tie there, and there's absolutely, you know, ancestral trauma that a lot of us have to deal with. And I don't mean just indigenous folks. I mean all kinds of folks.
Yeah.
But, you know, as the topic today is about us indigenous, Black POC, that's what we're talking about. And that's a real thing.
It is a real thing.
And my job as a living ancestor is to break that cycle of abuse and to break that narrative, you know?
Yes. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because, you know, folks at home are probably like, oh, okay, like, I get it, like, about intergenerational trauma. I'm like starting to understand, like, the light bulb's turning on now. I'm starting to maybe see where that came from in their own lineage and how that's maybe manifesting in their body or in their life. And so I think it's really great that you're touching on like the practical aspects of how to address it. Like, how does that look like, you know, healing wise today? How do you heal intergenerational trauma? And you said, you know, by dealing with abuse today in your life differently than, you know, ancestors of the past.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a modern woman. You know? I don't take that shit.
Yeah.
But I might be the first person in my family, the first woman in my family to say that and to really mean it, you know? These are different times, and I have the opportunity to change that. I can actively change that.
Yeah.
You know, I get to choose the path that I'm going down. And if there is suffering. This is suffering that I choose because I have to be authentic. My job as a living ancestor is obviously to break the cycle, but it's also to decolonize myself, and it's mm-hmm. to decolonize my life and the way I think, and to decolonize my body and all the ideas and judgments about my body. And it's to decolonize my food and decolonize my medicine and decolonize my health and really practice all of that.
Yes. Wow. So you and I could talk all night. I could just record like 5 podcast episodes right now.
I think we've at least identified like 5 or 6 offshoot podcasts just by talking about a few things. So that's great.
I love it. That means I get to have you back sometime. And
awesome.
We'll get to continue some very awesome conversations. So, okay. So, I wanted to ask you in terms of calls to action, for yourself, like where are you asking yourself, like right now, where's your growth edge? Where are you holding yourself accountable currently in terms of confronting intergenerational trauma? And then, also sharing some things with our fellow, queer trans people of color. Some things that they may be able to do. And if you choose to, you may also address like white allies and perhaps some ways that not how they can deal with their intergenerational trauma, because that's their beast to deal with. But, as our allies, like how can they better support us as we navigate ours?
Absolutely. I feel like a call to action is really important, and it literally means that. What can I do? Like, it's one thing to think about things in a supportive way, and like, to change the way you think about the world. That's a huge undertaking. But then what are you going to do with all that new knowledge and all that new mm-hmm. way of thinking that you have? And that's where the call to action comes in. To people like me, to queer Black people of color, to Indigenous women, to trans women, to everyone who's marginalized and who feels other. Like, all I can say to you is to stay vigilant and to really just be authentic.
Mm-hmm.
this relates to my like revolutionary thought. They're not playing nice out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's obvious. I mean, you don't even have to watch the news to know it. And you don't have to play nice either.
Mm-hmm.
You can stand up and you can say what you mean and you can fight for what you believe is right, and it's okay.
Yep.
And it's, don't think of things in terms of, the colonial constructs of like, oh, I don't want to raise too many, I don't want to like rock the boat. Rock that fucking boat.
Yep.
Because when something is not right, say so, because it takes people like that to change things.
And
so that's what I have to say about call to action. Fucking get out there and don't play nice either.
And don't let them shame you. I see it so often in spiritual spaces. Don't let them shame you for your anger. Don't let them say it's negativity, because it's not. There's a difference between abusive anger and then anger that is rooted in love. Okay. And so, you can carry and wield righteous rage. And you can breathe that fire. You don't have to be nice about your oppression. You don't owe nice to anybody.
And that's exactly what I mean, is you don't owe anyone, anyone who's trying to push you down doesn't deserve your compassion.
Nope.
Stand up for yourself.
Yep.
And like you said, there is a fine line between being abusive and being belligerent and being, straightforward and standing up for what's right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just encourage everyone to be active and to, if you want to go to a protest and you've never been, just go. It's amazing. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Besides being a lot of fun, it's really important. If you want to, stand up for yourself by casting a different vote than you normally do, do it and vote. Just everyone, come on, vote. Just do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost you anything.
I see a lot of folks even saying stuff like, I almost just want to like go down to the detention centers. I'm like, hey, like if you have the skin privilege to know that you can more or less navigate that space safely, go. Like that is actually like low key your duty as somebody, with a certain amount of privilege to like go put your body on the line. And A, guess what? Like, yeah, you don't know what to expect, but go find out. Just go see what's up, you know, and just be there, show up, do what you can. That's all any of us can do. And there's a lot of folks who, you know, as, you know, Black, Indigenous people of color, like, it is not safe for us to do so. So I get pretty frustrated when I'm looking around and I'm like, somebody fucking do something. Like, you know, because if one of us shows up, like, it's almost certain death for us. So, you know, it's like, hey, you over there with the blonde hair and the blue eyes, like, please, like, if you feel so, you know, passionate about this, like, use some of your vacation time and go, you know, go stand up for what's right. And,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, as a woman of color, as an Indigenous woman, and also as a disabled person, I have so many limits as to what I can do and how I can participate in things that I really, really want to participate in. Like, I would need a wheelchair to go to a protest, and I want to go punch Nazis as much as anyone does. Mm. But guess what? If I get hit, I go to the hospital and something bad happens because my body is, you know, it's the way it is. But do I want to be there? Damn right I want to be there. You know, yep. So if you have the privilege and the space and you can do this safely, God, go out and do it. Totally go out and do it.
Yeah.
And this touches on a great topic that we're going to talk about, which is, what do I have to say to white allies? What do I have to say to my allies, my male allies? Do this. Step up. If you have the privilege to be in those spaces safely, go do it. That's fantastic, you know? But that's really like a more physical call to action. Like, that's really being on the front lines, right?
Mm-hmm.
My more gentle suggestions to, you know, to white allies and allies in general has a lot more to do about social media. And that's something that is really difficult to navigate as a person of color, because this is across the board. This isn't a race thing or a gender thing, but being behind a computer screen is a safe place to be. Like, everyone's a tough guy behind their computer screen, right?
Yep.
So when you're on social media and you're in spaces where, you know, people of color are talking, as an ally, I have four rules for you. Number one, just stop talking.
Mm-hmm.
And that means to not just stop talking because I don't want to hear what you have to say, but stop talking because when you talk, you're taking up the space that is already yours. Like, I can turn on the TV and hear white people talking constantly. It's the norm. It's the default. When
right.
you stop talking and you allow space for someone else to talk, you're going to get a whole new perspective, and it's going to be valuable to you.
Pass the damn mic. Like, I
pass could,
like,
the mic.
Like, dear white allies listening at home, like, if you feel kind of tickled by what Medina just said, I like, riddle me this. When was the last time you saw an Indigenous person on TV? Like, for real.
Not playing an Indigenous person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, or like a Native American in a historical drama.
Seriously. So that's what we're saying is, like, we see all, we hear your perspectives, your stories, your narratives all day long. You know, it's just make room, make space for others consciously, please.
This is an easy way to understand it. And this is like a heated controversy on its own because Mel Gibson is a horrible racist.
Mm-hmm.
But when he made the movie Apocalypto, mm-hmm. you can hate the movie, you can love it. But my point is, that was the first time I ever saw people that looked like me and my family on the big screen.
Yep.
That is the first time I saw, you know, Mesoamerican culture, ancient Mesoamerican culture, and I heard the Nahuatl language on TV.
Beautiful.
That's the first time. So, yeah, it's like, you know, historically inaccurate, whatever. The point is, this is what we have. You know, I have one movie that I can point to, I'm like, oh no, there's people that look like me who come from where I come from who are in a movie. There's one.
Mm-hmm.
There's one. So that's what I mean about stop talking. Like, you know, the default is not Indigenous or people of color. So it doesn't mean shut up. It just means like, just stop talking and create space for others to speak.
yeah, use your privilege to amplify the voices of folks who aren't being heard as often.
Yeah. And number two on my list is actually listen. And it doesn't mean just like wait till your turn to talk, but listen to what people have to say, even if it's like kind of, you know, inflammatory, or if it makes you feel uncomfortable, or if it makes you feel some way about guilt, or if it's offensive, like just listen to what they have to say, you know,
like, and especially listen if what a person of color is saying does make you feel uncomfortable, because you really look at that.
Heads up. If you feel triggered, don't react. Question why you feel triggered. Like, ask yourself, why do I feel triggered? Why does that make me feel that way?
Yeah. And don't come to us to help you unpack that shit either. Like,
yeah, we're going to talk about that in a minute. The third thing on my list about what allies can do, which is really helpful, is to educate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many fantastic resources for following Indigenous and Black folks on social media, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, and they have so many great things to say. One of my favorites is Little Native Boy. Mm-hmm. And he's so cute. He is Dene Oglala Lakota and other Native tribes. And he's on Twitter and Instagram. And he was featured in Teen Magazine, which, by the way, or not Teen Magazine, Teen Vogue, which is surprisingly advanced and forward thinking. Like, you wouldn't think by the name, but they put out some great articles.
Yep.
So Little Native Boy shows basically what life is like for Native Americans. And he also supports other Indigenous people. Like, right now he's sharing a lot of information about the Mauna Kea protests on the Big Island of Hawaii, where I grew up. And that's really important to me. And I'm going to share some links with you guys later. But he's great. He's fantastic. There's also Fat Chicana Feminist. She's fantastic. There's Nalgona Positivity Pride. She's also fantastic. So there are places where you can go and listen to these voices, and it doesn't cost you anything. And basically, you just get to see what life is like, and you get to hear what they have to say.
I will say, though, I definitely encourage allies to, you know, seek out other cultures and stuff, too. And you're right, it doesn't cost anything. And however, though, you should, if you are consuming content, if you are learning something new, if things are shifting, you know, mindsets for you because of the things that you are witnessing outside of your culture, you should absolutely find a way to support. And like, let's be real, we live in a capitalist society. Money does equal power. And so
that's absolutely true. You're right.
Patronize all of those folks. I know Little Native Boy, he has a Patreon, because when you support my Patreon, part of my Patreon supports a handful of other creators, and he's one of them, because I love his content. And so, you know, like, it is important for all of y'all, if you're going to be out there, you know, seeking us out, that you make sure you guys pay us too.
Yeah, a lot of these people have even Etsy stores where they have, you know, merch, like t-shirts, bags, whatever, that has their logo on it, that has, like, you know, inspirational sayings. There's so many great things out there that you can do to support them.
Yeah. Awesome.
The last thing I want to say about what white allies can do is touchy subject, so I'm going to keep it short. And I want to talk a tiny, tiny bit about cultural appropriation, because this applies to my number one point, which was just, you know, stop talking and stop taking up the talking space. Cultural appropriation. This is a topic that really isn't about your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It really isn't. It's about the culture and the people who are being, you know, exploited.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people that I've spoken to, a lot of indigenous people that I've spoken to, specifically Native Americans, find it really offensive and hurtful to hear your opinion about cultural appropriation, because what it ends up sounding like sometimes is a defense.
Mm-hmm.
And to kind of progress past the feeling of like you have to defend yourself, all it takes is education and awareness and and just educate yourself.
And just like accept, like my whole thing about cultural appropriation is that like whatever culture it is, they are the authority. So they get to tell
absolutely.
You don't get to make the calls on what's okay and what's not. They get to tell you how they want to be spoken to, how they want you to speak about them, you know, what is closed, private, sacred, unavailable to you, what is, you know, okay to share, what's okay to partake in. They get to define that, and no one else does. So it's not really a two-sided conversation so much.
Yeah, exactly. And that was really beautifully put. Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
And talking about things in like a spiritual or mystic sense, there's a lot of kind of the, you know, love and light community mm-hmm. that feels like, you know, I'm really drawn to this particular culture or this particular item or this particular whatever, for whatever reason. And a lot of times, you know, these are concepts that are based in mysticism, like in a past life, I must have been whatever, right? I must have been Egyptian, let's just say, because I'm drawn to Egypt. Mm-hmm. That is kind of like, it's really hard to unpack all of that as an indigenous person, as a brown person, you know, as a black person. Like, how can you unpack something like that? Well, in a past life, I was this, that, and the other. You know, the very top layer of that, of unpacking all that, is that, well, it sounds like you're creating a self-imposed appropriation that's like a costume that you get to wear.
Yep.
But you get to take it off, you know?
Yep.
The culture that you're, you know, appropriating doesn't ever get to take it off.
Yep.
And they've got, you know, they deal with that shit 24/7, and you get to put it on when you feel like it, and then you take it off. So you don't really ever experience the true nature of that culture. You're just kind of appropriating what you like. So I guess in this intense segment that I'm sharing with you now, I guess I would just ask you guys, you know, to be really careful about cultural appropriation and be aware of wearing a costume and then being able to take it off.
Yeah. And like using spirituality to justify your bullshit.
Yes.
Don't do that.
Yeah. Don't do that. Don't do that.
It's so true. And
I mean, you know, there's hundreds of years of trauma that go along with this costume you're wearing, you know, or this whatever that you like, you know, that you don't have to deal with because you're just wearing it for a moment.
Yep. And like the other thing is that I really, you know, people ask me all the time about like, oh, so does that mean I can't have, you know, this statue of this thing in my house? I mean, my friend gave it to me. It's got nostalgic value. And I'm like, hold, let's rein it all the way back, friend. So number one, it's just an object. So you want to get spiritual with me? Objects, don't really matter, right? So then also I'm going to ask you, what part of you feels like you need to own it?
And great question. That's a deep one too. And think about it before you answer.
Yeah.
I ask myself that all the time, just being a part of the belly dance community, because I'm not Middle Eastern, you know? And it's something I thought about for years, but that's another topic we can talk about. But yeah, ask yourself, what part of this do I feel ownership about, you know?
Why do I need to own it? Why do I need to possess it? Because I can pretty much guarantee you that is some inner colonizer ass bullshit. So, you know, you don't need to own it to appreciate it.
Well said. Well said.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I think those are really, really great action items, Medina.
Great. Well, I was a little nervous about sharing so much because, boy, I'm opinionated. Boy, I have a lot to say.
I love it.
Please, everyone who's listening, just understand that, you know, these are really intense topics and questions. And this is the first time anyone has asked me about it. So, as I'm sure everyone listening, this might be the first time you're hearing someone talk about it. Like, I certainly only talk about these things in the safety of, you know, circles of friends who are also, you know, Indigenous or people of color. Mm-hmm. And I'm not all knowing, and I'm not perfect, and I'm not immune to mistakes, and I'm still learning. But what I can say with certainty is that this is my experience as, you know, an Indigenous person.
Exactly. And that's what this is all about, you know, just sharing that wisdom and those experiences. So thank you so much, Medina. Can you tell us where people can find you, your work, and how they can support you, whether that's like through social media, or if you have a website you'd like to point them to, or if, you know, even if like they're listening to this and they feel like you really shifted something for them, or they just would like to further pay you for your labor, or, you know, just support you on your journey, you know, via Cash App or Venmo, like how and where would you like folks to support you?
Oh, thank you for asking. And I really appreciate everybody, you know, who has reached out so far. So you can find me, Medina Maitreya, on Facebook, same name on Instagram and same name on Venmo. And I do have a website, which is MedinaMaitreya.com. It's pretty old, so you're not going to find a lot of new content there, but it does have links to all of my social media accounts. Also, what I'd like to mention is that a really good place to focus your financial support right now, besides other Indigenous folks, is to RAICES, R-A-I-C-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's happening at the border is really close to home for me, because these are, you know, Salvadoreños, and that's where my family is from, and they're just trying to come here, you know, seeking asylum, and we don't need to go into how horrible it is. I think we all know. RAICES, they're incredible. RAICES Texas, just Google them. There's ways that you can donate. You can donate all kinds of things. If you have extra miles on your frequent flyer, you can donate that so that lawyers can get down to the border and help people. There's all kinds of ways that you can help. So beyond helping me and beyond helping Megan, you can certainly help RAICES too.
Absolutely. And the thing is, so I'm also going to put all of this information up on Patreon, where this, you will be finding this post, and it will also be listed on my website. So, you know, if you didn't happen to catch all of those things, they will be up there for you to check out. So, thank you so much for being here, Medina. This has been really just cathartic, I guess.
Cathartic, therapeutic. I have never had this opportunity, to speak about these things so openly and to be asked all these wonderful questions. So I can't thank you enough. And I'm so looking forward to all the other guests that you're going to have on this podcast. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so honored to have you. Oh, and to just take in, I'm still like taking in everything that you shared. Is perfect. Now, folks at home, if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting it on Patreon. And you can do so by visiting patreon.com/revolutionarymystic. All of our guests on this podcast are paid as a part of a movement to #actuallysupportwitchesofcolor. If you have not seen my post about that, you can see it on Instagram. But it's important that folks do not just consume our energy, and really trying to do what I can to break that pattern as a living ancestor and make sure that folks are being compensated for the tremendously powerful work that we do. So you can contribute to that on Patreon. And of course, if you want to know more about what I do, hire me to read for you, to speak, to teach, etc., you can check out all kinds of things that I do, my Hoodoo Botanica, the psychic readings, Hoodoo online classes, my scholarship program for Witches of Color, and my free Facebook group called Revolutionary Mystics. And I also give witch tips and other insightful pieces of advice on my YouTube channel. You can get to all of that stuff by visiting revolutionarymystic.com. So, thank you all for listening.
Yeah, thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Medina, for being here. And please don't forget to give us a good podcast review on iTunes and Google Play. That is one of the free ways that you can support us. And I would love that, because, you know, it helps expand our reach and it's just really great exposure, and it helps us be able to connect with other folks that need to hear these messages. And of course, share it with your friends. So thank you all for tuning in. And until next time, I send you all so much love and power. All right. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Revolutionary Mystic Podcast. If you enjoyed this show, please consider supporting it on Patreon by visiting patreon.com/revolutionarymystic. All of our guests are paid as part of a movement to hashtag actually support witches of color by creating financial equity. You can also check out the online Hoodoo Botanica, book psychic readings, take online classes, apply for the scholarship program for witches of color, join the free Facebook group, and watch Witch Tips on my YouTube channel by visiting revolutionarymystic.com.